I saw it on Linden Street. Hello, and welcome to I Saw It on Linden Street, the show dedicated to the joy of finding an appreciation in cult films, exploitation oddities, beloved classics, and all points in between. I'm your host, Chris Roberts, inviting you to join us here at the Linden Street Cinema Experience Theater as we once again dig up a fun cinematic relic from the past. If you're new to the show, thank you for joining us. This isn't your standard film review. Rather, it's more of a synopsis of a film that we feel deserves to have another inspection. A little bit of background thrown in on the actors, maybe some interesting stories about the director, and if I'm doing my job, perhaps you get half an amusing story or two out of it from me. Fair be warned, while we don't cover all aspects of the plot, we do discuss endings and spoilers. So, if you'd like to be surprised, please give the film a viewing before you listen to us. If you like us, and I'd hope that you do, please recommend us to a friend, give us a favorable review. As we embark on this month's theme, the completely non-judgmental You Suck, we are covering a batch of films that feature some of our favorite cinematic treatments of Nosferatu, also known as vampires. So why don't we continue on that route with the 1985 comedy Once Bitten? Join us! The notion of a vampire in modern times is nothing really new. So when it's played for comedy in a film, it always gives me a moment of pause. Mainly because I just want to see what's going to be done that hasn't been done before. Or at least to view what kind of new twist can be added to that old chestnut. That, and it also depends on what you mean exactly by modern times. You see, the moment you're occupying is modern to you. And time continues to march on regardless. So we've seen the likes of Dracula, played by the great Bela Lugosi, interacting with the then-modern comedy team of Abbott and Costello back in 1948, in the film Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Don't worry, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man show up in that one too. The humor is just derived from two bumbling New Yorkers interacting with an old-world vampire and his cadre of monster friends.
Where did he go?
Chick! I'm getting tired of looking for Joan.
Get him.
Didn't Mr. Talbot tell you not to put that mask on anymore? Now what are you putting it on for? Now take the mask off! Come on! Now, what are you looking in there for? You know you're not going to find Joan there. Now, come on, get up! Get up! We got to find Joan.
Come on, Chick.
Now, take that mask off! On your friend!
...1967 saw Roman Polanski directing and starring in a comedy called The Fearless Vampire Killers, or Pardon Me, But Your Teeth Are in My Neck. And that's where he ended up meeting his future wife, Sharon Tate. For most of the film, the comedy is just derived from the bumbling vampire hunter and his goofball assistant trying to get the job of eliminating the evil count accomplished. And, you know, mixed results ensue. By the 70s, even the art scene was taking shots at vampires. Andy Warhol's 1974 Blood for Dracula had Udo Kier as a sickly Dracula, forced to leave his home in Transylvania for the simple reason that there just weren't any virgins left for him to consume. In this version, he can only subsist on virgin blood. And by moving to the Italian countryside, he starts to find he has a problem there, because he begins to feed on what is supposedly a bunch of chaste young Catholic girls, and learns otherwise.
Oh. body can't take this treatment anymore. The blood of this horse is killing me. I just want my coffin back to sleep in.
Yes. Yes.
So, today's feature takes us into the very comedic portrayal of the very modern, very 80s time period that it's set. And in a move that doubles down on aesthetic, we are talking about 1980s LA, which is practically a character itself in this film. But we're also talking about a vampire who is fun-loving yet incredibly vain, who does aerobics and dresses to the nines in the latest fashions of the day. A vampire who, in this case, is female and is looking for the rarest of the rare in a 1980s film. A teenage boy who is also a virgin. Let the hilarity ensue. So, full confession. I'm not a Jim Carrey fan. I never have been. I have seen his work. Don't try to run up to me and say, "Have you seen?" I've seen it. There are movies that he has done that I do enjoy, but on the whole, he is not for me. Now, that being said, this was not a blanket statement of hate towards the man. When he was ascending into being the Jim Carrey that most people think about, that was right around the time I was in junior high, so I cannot tell you how absolutely sick I was of people doing Ace Ventura or mask impressions, as well as throwing around lines from the film Dumb and Dumber. In my opinion, Jim Carrey works best in small doses or when he's in very straight roles, where he is, acting! Not doing his shtick, which often devolves into him making grotesque faces while making bizarre noises. Hence, films that he's in, Earth Girls Are Easy, Man in the Moon, The Majestic, are all projects I can get behind, as well as this film. And thankfully, he keeps his mugging rather subdued for the entire film. Now, I'm going to pause and stop because I realize I've said something out of slight context. Earth Girls Are Easy, he absolutely does a rubber face routine. He is making crazy noises, doing weird impressions. He's playing an alien from outer space, as well as being with Damon Wayans and Jeff Goldblum, who all three are being wacky purposefully. It fits. That does not negate my statement that I prefer him in straight man roles where you can actually get behind him as a real life character. Thanks. Sorry, had to take a sidebar. This film is steeped in bad 80s teen cliches, equally trying to be a teen sex comedy while not be as bad or crude as some of the other films of the day, or even for that matter modern comedies as they would go now. It still maintains a bit of cringe factor, however, by today's standards. Fair be warned for those of you who are easily offended, this is a film from 1985. So, you are going to hear the term fag tossed around very casually. Does it make it right? No, not at all. But it doesn't make it any different either, and pretending that people didn't toss that word around and get outraged over it will not change anything. So, sit back, realize we are viewing a time where people were less enlightened, and allow yourself to still enjoy the story itself. I'm sure you're actually going to be able to do that, so why don't we just now go and enjoy a nice trailer?
Mark Kendall's a regular guy.
Get me out of here!
With normal problems.
I want to, but I want it to be special.
But Mark's just discovered...
Hello, tall, dark, and handsome.
...that his one-night stand...
I haven't had anything this pure since the Vienna Boys Choir hit town.
...has been around for centuries.
I'm 390 years old.
400 if you're a day. Mark Kendall is necking...
Finally happened.
...with a vampire.
Did I enjoy it?
Now, he's losing his girl.
Bit my lip.
His customers...
Get out of here!
...his image...
Look, I'm not there!
...and his mind.
Oh, wow, I love your outfit.
I'm not wearing a costume.
Mark's got to choose.
It's like you're not the Mark I thought I knew. You look like Jerry Lewis.
Between his first love.
I'm the owner of the pants you've been trying to get into for the last 4 years.
And his last date.
How would you like to spend eternity with me?
I can't. I gotta go to college.
Before his future goes up in smoke.
How'd you like your crotch set on fire?
Ooh, rough trade.
Nothing is sacred. In a tasty comedy.
Can I have one of those uncooked ones?
You can sink your teeth into.
How was it?
Delicious.
Once bitten.
Once bitten.
I don't want to be a vampire. I'm a day person.
We open on a modern Art Deco palace situated in 1980s LA, where Sebastian, performed by the amazing Cleavon Little, the effeminate familiar of the Countess, portrayed by Lauren Hutton, rouses his mistress to get ready for a night on the town. While immortal, the Countess is able to maintain her youthful appearance through a ritual of drinking the blood of a young male virgin 3 times before Halloween every year. She is now only a scant few weeks away before Halloween, and she must select a young man, which is hard to do in such a swinging modern city like 1980s LA. Which, of course, then brings us to high school sweethearts Mark Kendall and Robin Pierce, as played by Jim Carrey and Karen Coppens, respectively, who are madly in love, but Karen's just unsure if she's ready to sleep with Mark, driving him in, air quotes, crazy. Pushed on by his 2 goofball buddies who work at a burger stand, Jamie, Thomas Ballator, and Russ, Skip Lackey, to come out with them and go to a singles club where they can pick up women. This way, Mark can just meet someone, get this whole virginity thing taken care of, and then he won't have to be pressuring Robin anymore. Russ is actually convinced he can get himself a lady by laying on this patented rap that he keeps repeating to women throughout the entire film.
Hi there. I'm Russ, and I'm a Sagittarius. I enjoy surfing, candlelit dinners, and Tolstoy. Look, I'm a mature person, and you're a mature person, so why don't we just skip all the bullshit, get rid of our inhibitions, and do what we really want to do.
Surprisingly, Mark ends up being picked up at the singles bar by the Countess, who ends up taking him first off to the side and then later invites him to come back with her to her place when a misunderstanding causes a brawl to break out in the bar, forcing Jamie, Russ, and the rest of the patrons to be arrested. Back at the Countess's mansion, she seduces a terrified Mark, first by biting the buttons off his shirt and then by removing his pants. He passes out after she kisses and then bites his thigh. He wakes up feeling groggy, disoriented, and not remembering anything that has happened to him. And the Countess thanks him for a lovely evening, making him believe that they've actually slept together. She cryptically tells him he is now hers, and he tries to rationalize that, you know, he's already in a relationship, he has this loving girl in his life, and he never should have done this. Sebastian and the Countess, of course, patronize him and then see him on his way home. Immediately, Mark does not feel like himself. He starts to look more pale. His usual love of well-done meat is replaced by a desire for raw, blood-filled food. He becomes sensitive to light. He stays up all night pacing and finds himself napping in a chest at the foot of his bed. Robin gets word that Mark has had some sort of casual fling with some older lady, but since he's completely unable to remember anything about it and seems so off, she, for some inexplicable reason, forgives him completely about this transgression. Things seem to be somewhat back to normal, but while they're out shopping, the Countess appears and bites Mark a second time while he's trying on clothes in a mall changing room. The young couple end up attending a Halloween dance together, where Mark receives an award for being the best-dressed vampire, even though he keeps maintaining he is not wearing a costume.
Okay, Sebastian, out of the closet. Now. I thought I heard noise as I was checking for prowlers.
In a $100 scarf, perhaps?
You bought it for $49.99.
Do you mind if we don't go bar hopping tonight? I'm exhausted. I'm 390 years old.
400 if you're a day.
What's the difference? I'm so old I can't remember my own sign.
You'll feel much more secure when Mark has given you your second transfusion.
Life used to be so simple. All one had to do to get a good meal was go out in the field and pick up a shepherd or two.
Remember the look of terror in a peasant's eyes when you swooped down on him?
And plagues. Whole cities infested with rats.
People respected the power of a vampire.
Mm. It's been 3 days. Do you think we ought to go find Mark?
Are you suggesting we invade suburbia? Bowling alleys? RVs? Chicken McNuggets?
Still planning on making a meal of him, the Countess shows up to the dance. Dressed, I guess the best way I can describe her outfit is Las Vegas magician's assistant meets Bob Fosse backup dancer. Complete with cigarette holder, nonetheless. Now, it's a 1980s film, so there isn't a montage that's readily available in this comedy, which means we have to go to the second bullet in our trope gun, and that's a dance-off. So both Robin and the Countess give elaborate dances, both with and for the affections of Mark, with Robin eventually winning him over in the contest. The Countess leaves in a huff with Sebastian, but still plans on psychically calling the young man to her the next evening. Not surprisingly, even Robin starts to think there's something actually wrong with Mark. As they argue and exit the dance, she begins to notice he's no longer casting a reflection in the mirrors in the hall. She begins to consult with local bookstore owner. Sidebar, that's another great 80s trope. Why would you go to a library where you could have a subject matter expert in a librarian explain something to you, when instead you can go to a bookstore where it's just a merchant who just wants to sell you stuff? They don't know everything about books. They're too busy trying to sell them to you. But from the bookstore owner, she gets details on how beautiful women vampires often feed on young male victims to maintain their beauty, biting them on the inner thigh and draining them of their essence. She then turns and asks Jamie and Russ to help her out, to look and see if Mark has 2 bite wounds on his thigh. You know, do it when you guys are showering after PE. Now, the boys make a valiant attempt, but Mark is, you know, washing and keeps turning away from them, you know, as one would normally do, because he's soaping up his torso and trying to get clean, which forces them to attempt to grab him from behind and hold him down in the boys' shower, which quickly escalates into the locker room being cleared by way of some very un-PC homophobic panic.
This is terrible. I can't believe this happened.
It's the most humiliating experience of my life.
This is awful. This is the suckiest thing that could ever happen. The whole school thinks we're gay.
Don't be such a twerp. Our past history speak for themselves. No one's gonna think we're gay.
I don't have a past history, okay? Neither do you. This is it. We might as well move in together and get his and his towels.
Hey, who cares what those assholes think? What were they doing in the showers in the first place?
They were washing. We were enacting a prison rape scene.
What was that scene in the shower all about?
That's the thanks I get for trying to help out a friend?
Oh, you're a big help. Thanks a lot. Did it ever occur to you guys that maybe you could have asked me?
It's after giving that revelation, in front of Jamie and Russ, that Mark suddenly finds himself completely entranced, and he is called back to the Countess to her L.A. mansion. all the while Russ, Jamie, and Robin follow, eventually breaking in and fighting off vampires in the mansion who are trying to turn Mark into one of their own. Now, a bunch of silly chases ensue. Russ ends up dropping his pickup line on two female vampires that are living in the mansion, and they both surprisingly end up sleeping with him and Jamie. Robin finds Mark, and together they end up hiding in a coffin that was supposed to be his gift for joining with the vampires. The Countess, her minions, and the friends all gather around, and the doors swing open.
You're too late.
You couldn't have. You've been in there less than a minute.
You could have. But you didn't have time to enjoy it.
With Mark, now clearly not a virgin, horrified, the Countess begins to rapidly age at the stroke of midnight. Still a vampire, but now looking like an old crone, wearing the clothes of an old woman. Sebastian escorts her away, promising to care for her. Jamie and Russ just kind of hang out, and Robin and Mark grin at each other and jump back into the coffin together. The soundtrack soars and the film ends. Wait, seriously? You guys know that these vampires are still hanging around and will eat you, right? You know, they only needed you for something very specific, and now that they don't need you intact, they can kill you all. Why are you hanging around a vampiric mansion? Run, you fools, run! So, how do we even start unpacking this film? Well, let's do this. Don't let my aforementioned criticism fool you. The movie is intended to be light, fluffy, a date movie for teens. Nothing too hard about it, and nothing to really be concerned about the overall ramifications of, you know, real-life vampires. No vampires or people even die in this picture, and with the exception of some, like, slapstick moves, there's not even violence here. Just a lot of hissing and people, like, shoving into each other. So you're really dealing with some low-stakes fare throughout all of this. So here's why I think you should enjoy this film. A. Cleavon Little. He is a fantastic actor who was taken from us all far too young. He ended up dying of complications from colorectal cancer in 1992 at the age of 53. Little starred in exploitation classics like Cotton Comes to Harlem from 1970, that's totally going to be a future show, Vanishing Point in 1971, also going to be a future show, Mel Brooks' amazing Blazing Saddles, basically just think anything I say after this point is a future show, from 1974, the film FM in 1978, which would be the inspiration for the wonderful sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati. Look, the man had chops, and he steals every scene that he's in when he's on screen. Now, I say watch this film for him alone. I'm aware that some people have taken offense to his whole gay butler depiction, but to them I say, can't you be gay and have a job? He's not mocking the fact that he's homosexual, or a vampire for the film, and rather he finds the concept of having to slum it by hanging around high school children beneath him, but he goes along with the entire, you know, plot because it's part of the wishes for his friend and employer, the Countess, to help her. I enjoy how he plays Sebastian. I think he does a spot-on job, and he's bored with all the material trappings around him, but he's just forced to go along with this because it's his day job, and he excels at it. B. The soundtrack for Once Bitten is fabulous. It is a time capsule of the 80s. I can't recommend it enough. To date, this soundtrack has not been issued on CD or has had a digital release, so the only way for you to get a copy currently is to go back and find someone who's willing to sell you it on vinyl used, which I am happy to say I have one here at our house. That being said, do yourself the favor. Go on YouTube. They have uploaded the entire soundtrack. Listen to the album. From the title track by 3Speed, the follow-up Stop Talking About Us, and of course the fabulous Hands Off by Maria Vidal that the characters held the dance off to, man, it is fantastic. So again, if you love the 80s as a genre of music, this is a perfect audio time capsule for you to open up and experience and get to play with. Now, for all the positive things that I've said about this film, I would be shirking my duty as a human being to not to address the elephant in the room that is the film's casual homophobia, which I know I've brought up previously, but I have to say, like many, 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 and I am including children's films, many films of the day from the 80s, they tossed around the insult of fag as if it was inconsequential. Do I still find this film funny in the context of the jokes they're making? Yes, I do. I am from that era. I understand what and who they were playing to. Again, does it make it right today? No. No, it doesn't. But both the wonderful and tragic thing about films is, just like an insect encased in amber, they are unable to be changed because they are soaked in the era they're from. They're static. I would argue they shouldn't be. This is from a time when people were not as enlightened and progressive as they are now in their thoughts. But we shouldn't pretend that we were better than we were. Rather, we need to use this as an example of how far we have come and how much further we still need to go as a society. Do I still think the scenes in the shower are funny? Absolutely. But it's not for the slurs said by the following students. It's from the sheer slapstick and awkwardness of two guys trying to nonchalantly see if their buddy has a bite mark on his inner thigh in a public shower and failing miserably at doing it. To me, that's where the comedy lies, as well as the revelation that, you know, they simply could have asked Mark if he had been bitten, as opposed to trying to pin him down. All that being said, I will put my soapbox away. So a couple of interesting things about this film. Yes, it was the first mainstream American film that had cast Jim Carrey as a lead, although it's interesting to point out he was not the first choice of the role of Mark. Screenwriter Jeffrey House had pushed production to use television actor Michael J. Fox as the lead role for Mark, but Sam Goldwyn Jr. himself turned it down, thinking that Michael J. Fox would not have the ability to carry a film on his own. After all, he's a television actor. which you need to remember, this film ended up being released in the fall of 1985, which means Sam Goldwyn Jr. had to spend the entire summer of 1985 seeing Michael J. Fox star in that year's blockbuster, a little film called Back to the Future. Nice going, Sam. Still, for a little film that was made using mostly unknowns, I say that as Lauren Hutton and Cleavon Little were the big stars of the film, this film did all right for itself, at least at the box office. It definitely made its money back. It was produced for the tune of $3.2 million and ended up raking in over $10 million at the box office, which is always a plus. It received some decent criticism, neither being hated nor fawned over by the critics of the day. It currently holds an 18% rating on Rotten Tomatoes with the critics, but hey, at least the audience says 39% of them like it. Honestly, I feel that's just because this film is one that not a ton of folks have ended up seeing. To me, I say this, do yourself a favor. Take a brain vacation, pop this flick in, sit back, and enjoy it for what it is. Some weird 80s fun. The version of Once Bitten that we screened here at the LSCE was the 2003 MGM Bare Bones DVD release, which comes with some pretty special features, I must say, English and Spanish subtitles, as well as a basic trailer for the film itself. Hey, it's basic. But the film really hasn't gotten too many upgrades for your viewing options. It's been re-released and repackaged a few times over the last decade, awkwardly paired with some black comedy films. One of the weirdest was pairing it with 1989's Vampire's Kiss. That's an early Nick Cage role about an mentally ill man who thinks he's a vampire. Not really on the same level as this. And later it was paired as a triple feature with Rodney Dangerfield's 1983 Easy Money and the Billy Crystal Danny DeVito Throw Mama from the Train from 1987. Great film, but doesn't really fit with this one. As of this writing, all of those previously established matchups are seemingly out of print, I would argue thankfully. But you can still access them through private sellers. Yet, you know what still endures? That bare bones MGM release of Once Bitten. The very one we screened here can be yours by way of Amazon for $9.99, and I would say it is well worth your time to get a copy of it. Now, that being said, there's also been a Scream Factory double feature release of the film on Blu-ray, where they have paired the film with Love at First Bite, that's a George Hamilton 1979 vampire comedy. I'm not a big fan of it, but if you like your vampires going to discos in 1970s New York, it is definitely something you should check out. It makes for sort of an uneven double feature, but at least it makes sense, preferably to the ones I've already related. If you have to have this on Blu-ray, you can acquire that Blu-ray itself for the small fee of $14.99 by way of Amazon again. Just wanted to point out, folks, we don't get anything here for recommending you purchase the films we screen. We just think it's important to continue to support physical media, so these fine companies will keep releasing these title films for us to enjoy. And at the end of the day, isn't that all that matters? Us enjoying films? I thought so. So that's going to wrap things up here for this episode of I Saw It on Linden Street. Hopefully it sounded okay, folks. I ended up having to record this from a hotel room in Las Vegas, so I'm hoping the quality is up to your standards. I thank you for joining us. You know, we've been having slow but steady growth out there, and I would like to thank you for it. So again, I would ask you, please, if you like us, follow us on our Facebook page at the Linden Street Cinema Experience and recommend us to your friends. We're also on Instagram at LSCE_podcast, or you can follow us on Twitter at LSCEP. Please follow or subscribe to us on the podcast platform of your choice. If you're an Apple user, please, we'd greatly appreciate a 5-star and a review from you. If you want to get in touch with us, make a comment, ask us questions, send us wonderful things, please feel free, reach out and email us at lindenstreetcinemaexperience@gmail.com. If you'd like to have a more personal interaction, or would just like to have your own segment on the sidecar, please feel free, send us an audio message by way of Anchor. It's a free and easy app to use. So until next time, take care out there, and remember, life's too short not to live in the past. Take it easy, everybody.